is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Pascal Meurs from Belgium, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. We are talking NBA conference semifinals slash finals tonight. What a game from the Nuggets. It's 11:48 p.m. Got it in before midnight again on a Tuesday. So what a game. Holy cow.
Yeah, I thought it was a great game. I'll be honest with you. I've decided at least that I don't really watch the first quarter because the first quarter doesn't tell the story. And I've kind of given up on really it's almost like the first half is meaningless. If you really go back and you look at all these games, other than the Lakers series, I don't think that the first half is very indicative of how the game's going to end. I don't know if you agree with that statement, but you know, we could draw parallels to the first game tonight. I mean, Boston was in pretty good control of the game in the first half. You know, I think it was back and forth, but then, I mean, that game, and we're going to get there. I think that series, like you said before we got on the air, I think that series is going to be fantastic. And listen, the bottom line is this. I genuinely think this, Mike, and you can agree with me or disagree with me. I think Doc Rivers is literally a slightly better version of Jason Garrett in the NBA. He is the clapper. He is the clapper on the sidelines, clapping for his guys. They're down 16 points with 3.5 minutes left, and he's just standing there clapping, not doing anything. He's like, I don't want to belittle Doc Rivers here, but let's just go through this. He has blown 6-3-1 or 3-2 leads. Starting in 2003, he blew a 3-1 lead against the Pistons. In 2009, he blew a 3-2 lead against the Magic. In 2010, he blew a 3-2 lead in the finals against the Lakers. In 2012, he blew a 3-2 lead against the Heat. In 2015, he blew a 3-1 lead against the Rockets. And then in 2020, he blew a 3-1 lead against the Nuggets. It's unacceptable. If Doc, I don't think Doc Rivers will be fired because he's just too well respected as a coach, but that should never happen. Never, never, never. That many times. You had arguably, I know you didn't have the best player on the floor tonight because Jokic, and I think Jokic was the best player on the floor tonight. And he didn't score a lot of points, but he was all around the best player on the floor for that game. But you have Kawhi Leonard and you have Paul George. And they are better than Murray, anyone else on the Nuggets team. I know Murray scored 40 points tonight. I know it. But those two guys are better than them.
Wait. Okay. Theoretically, Leonard and George have accomplished more in their careers. Well, I shouldn't say theoretically. They have accomplished more in their careers. However, tonight and over the course of this series, I think you could easily make an argument that at worst, Jokic had an equal impact as Kawhi going into tonight's game. Now, clearly tonight, Jokic outperformed Kawhi in this game. But going into tonight, going into game seven, I think you could easily argue that those two had a very similar impact. They were both clearly far and away the best player on their team, having the most impact on winning and losing in this series. And then Murray's been average. Paul George has had, I think he had one, what I would say, above average game. And the rest of the games, he's been a below average or average at best. And then tonight, I mean, holy cow. Those two, Kawhi and Paul George, combined 10 for 38 from the floor. 4 for 18 from three. How many free throws do you think they shot tonight? Do you have the box score in front of you?
No, I'll pull it up real quick.
Okay, well, I'll just tell you. Kawhi, 0 for 0 from the line. Paul George, 0 for 1. So your two best guys get to the line once, and I don't know, you could attribute that to
whatever
you want.
I know what the problem was, Mike. They didn't give any Kawhi any days off in the playoffs, so he was tired. So
he had every other day off, just like he would if he was load managing during the season. So
I was being facetious.
I understand. Let's tip our hat to the Denver Nuggets and to what Jokic and Murray were able to put together in this series and in this game, and particularly in these last three games, to come back from the deficits that they came back from. Tonight they didn't get down nearly as far as they had previously. I think they were down 11 maybe in the second quarter was the farthest they got behind. But it's just they just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And I told you, I texted you at halftime. I said, I don't trust anyone on the Clippers except Kawhi. And then I think Kawhi was maybe 0 for 9 in the fourth quarter.
Well, they didn't make a field goal until 5 minutes left of the game. I was texting my buddy, and I was like, they just scored their first field goal in the fourth quarter, and it was 7 minutes into the quarter. That's ridiculous.
Well, and what's crazy is that you don't necessarily think of, at least you certainly wouldn't have going into this series or over the course of the development of this Denver Nugget team, you would not have said that they were a great defensive team. I think they finished 15th maybe in the regular season this year. Defensively. And so nobody, you know, you look at their team, getting Gary Harris back has been huge. And then Harris has actually contributed just enough on offense to make him valuable. He played 37 minutes tonight, scored 14 points, made 2 threes. If you get that Gary Harris, combining that with his defense, Jeremy Grant's been awesome. He's played really, really well throughout the entire series. Millsap hit 2 huge threes tonight. I mean, just huge. And really, he's the one who started the comeback in game 5 in the fourth quarter, in the third quarter, when he scored, 16 or 17 points in that quarter in the first comeback in game 5. So they've gotten so much contribution from these other guys that it's allowed Jokic and Murray to take advantage and put themselves in a position to win. I mean, come on, a closeout game against the presumptive NBA champions in a lot of people's minds going into the regular season, going into the playoffs, going into this series. I think most people probably were still picking the Clippers. And for Murray to come out of that with 40 points in game seven, and then, as you said, I don't even think he was the most impactful guy in the game for the Nuggets. I mean, it's crazy that Jokic shot 5 of 13, 22 rebounds, 13 assists, just controlled everything. They kept saying during the broadcast, he's so in control and he's so methodical. And part of it is that's just the way, I mean, he's never going to be an explosive, fast twitch guy.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun to just watch him carve up a defense and look for people and just be, again, patient. He dribbles in, he makes his move, and then, boom, he finds somebody. We talked the other night about how maybe that Luka was the only guy who could make some of the passes that LeBron makes. And Jokic doesn't do them nearly as athletically, clearly, as LeBron, and not nearly as athletically even as Luka. But some of the reads that he's making and some of the finds, he gets into the center of the lane and then he's just picking out shooters.
Did you see the one pass he made at the end of the game there?
Yeah, that was crazy.
you could tell Beverly was pissed, though. That's why he fouled Murray.
Yeah, Beverly did not enjoy that particular play, I'm sure, and neither did any of the Clippers. But it's funny. I mean, let me just finish my Jokic point, then go to what I was going to say there. No. I don't interrupt. That's me interrupting myself. Jokic was just, he was incredible. He was incredible through the whole series. He carried them. And Denver just looked like, I mean, you could go all the way down the line of every guy they played. So every guy who played legitimate minutes tonight looked focused, looked dialed in, looked like they were ready to go. And then you just go down the Clippers and I'm like, none of these guys, like, they all look shook. They all look rattled. Nobody really wants to take a shot. Even with about maybe 5 or 6 minutes to go, they had a couple possessions where you could maybe say it was good ball movement. But to me, it felt much more like that guy should have taken the shot. But then he just wanted to throw one more pass because he didn't want to be the guy to take the shot. And they looked scared. And I think when you lose two giant leads in consecutive games, at that point, you can't feel secure even if you're up by 10. And I think they just started looking around, and I'm not sure that, to your point about Doc Rivers, I'm not sure Doc provided them with much confidence with, again, whether it's his demeanor, whether it's his words, with its adjustments. I don't know what it is, or lack of adjustments, but that team just looked shook, and Denver looked confident, and it just kept building and building and building and building, and you could see it. I texted you at the end of the first quarter. I'm like, the longer they hang around, the better it gets for them, because I just think Clippers were ripe to be picked. Yep.
So the press conference right now, this is classic Doc Rivers. We're kicking the can here, Mike. You ready? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Part of it is our guys missed a lot of time in the bubble. We mentioned that Lou Williams, Trez, and Beverly all missed time. Some of that came back and haunted us. Well, I'm going to go back to what I said when we first started the bubble, Mike, talk. I said the Clippers just don't seem to be having the cohesive stuff that the Lakers had going on. And I said the Lakers were treating it like a college atmosphere. They seemed to be really enjoying being around each other, and the Clippers really seemed to not want to do anything around each other. That led to Lou Williams going to, what was the name of the place again? Magic City, right?
Magic City.
And the downfall started there, Mike. Like I said, I still picked the Clippers to win this series because I thought they'd at least make it to the conference finals. But listen, I just think, I don't know. I'm not buying this. I think Doc Rivers is going to still be the coach. I want to be clear here. I don't think he's going to get fired. But I think he's got one more year, and if they don't do anything next year, he's gone. I'm making that prediction right now, Mike. And whether that's his choice or the Clippers' choice next season, if they don't get to the finals next year, he's out. Done.
Well, Doc's built up some capital with the Clippers franchise, and I'm sure with Ballmer, just because of he was kind of the steward getting them through the Donald Sterling fiasco. And so I think he gained a lot of respect from people, not that he didn't have it before, but I think just the way he handled that and how he became the face of that franchise through that whole mess, I think that earned him some capital that he's got in the bank. And so, no, I don't think Doc is going to get fired, but you went through his history of blowing leads, and at a certain point, you can put it on the coach. You got to put it a little bit on the players as well. They just did not come to play. And Denver was ready. Look, Denver played three outstanding, I won't even want to say games, because they played two outstanding halves in game five and game six. And then tonight, I think they played overall, they played a really good game throughout the entire time. I know they were down four at halftime, but I felt like they were right there where they wanted to be. They just looked more confident. Even though they were down, there was a shot when they were coming into halftime. And I think, did Murray hit the last basket of the half? I know Denver scored the last basket of the half.
Yeah, I think it was Murray.
Yeah, and Murray was walking off. And you could just see the confidence. Like, the Clippers were walking off the floor at halftime looking down. And they were up by four. And Denver was walking off with their heads held high. They were ready to go. And you could just tell body language. And there was just a feel. And it was weird because almost, even though there was no crowd, and I know the crowd noise is artificial, it was almost like you could feel the tension and the pressure that was mounting on the Clippers. And they just wilted, man. They just did. And Jokic and Murray, I mean, at this point, you know, you could have said, hey, Murray's first series against Utah and what he did, he was incredible. But, you know, it's the Jazz and they don't really have anybody who can guard him. And, you know, what's he going to do? And was he as good in this series as he was in that one? No. But, man, to come up with 40 in game seven and then what Jokic just did. I go back to thinking about our playoff preview before last season. And at that point, we were talking about, I know I had said, I don't think I've watched more than like a minute of Nikola Jokic basketball. And the question that we had was, is this guy going to be a go-to guy in the playoffs? Or is he just another guy who's putting up good stats in the regular season and you really can't build a team around him that's going to win in the playoffs? And he was phenomenal last year in the playoffs and he's been even better. And the surprising thing to me is, like, you can give him the ball and he can get you buckets. Not only can he find guys and pass and do all the things that he kind of does really well. But there was many, many times in this series and throughout the last two playoffs where he's hit big bucket after big bucket, just getting where he wants to go and shooting shots over the top of smaller guys and using his body to get in towards the basket. He's just really, really hard to deal with. He's a difficult matchup for just about anybody. And then you combine that where if Murray's going to do what he's done, and clearly any given game now, I mean, he's capable of putting up 35 or 40 points in any game.
He's going to score a lot of points in the upcoming series because I don't know who's guarding
Absolutely. There's no question he's going to score a lot of points. And I think for Denver, you start looking ahead and you say, whew, I mean, if those other guys on their team can do what they did in this series, if they can get good minutes from Harris and
don't say it, Mike. Come on. There's no chance. There's no chance.
What?
There's no chance they have any chance of beating the Lakers. I'm staking. All right,
We're gonna get there, man. We're gonna get there.
Come on.
I'm just saying these other guys. Okay.
Come on, man. No, come on.
We'll get there. Let's bury the Clippers officially.
Yeah, hold on.
First,
Damian Lillard just tweeted, "Hey, Pat Bev, since I haven't made my, I guess I should extend this Cancun invite since I haven't made my arrangements yet."
Nice.
Pat Beverly said that he hopes the Blazers have fun in Cancun when they got knocked out.
That's it. Well, hey, it could be a party. Clippers Blazers party. Okay.
Well, there's some pretty good banter between McCollum and Lillard going on right now. Someone tweeted at Dame saying, "Hey, yo, Dame, is this shot good?" And it was Paul George's off the side of the backboard. And Dame said, "Looks good to me."
All right. So here's my favorite tweet. It's not really attributed to anyone because it's more of a graphic, but it just is the dynamics of the Paul George trade. Now, I knew that they gave up a lot to get Paul George and, in essence, also to get Kawhi. But when I read this list to you, do you know what it is off the top of your head?
Way too much.
You're gonna be stunned beyond belief.
Wait, stop.
Let me just try
to remember what it was?
Sure, go ahead.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Okay, good.
Danilo Gallinari.
Yep.
There was one more player, and then it was a whole ton of picks. I can't remember the other player though.
No more players.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So in this trade, the Clippers received Pandemic P. The Thunder received, as you stated correctly, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, the 22 LA Clippers first round pick, the 2024 LA Clippers first round pick, the 2026 LA Clippers first round pick, the 2021 Miami Heat first round pick, the 2023 Miami Heat first round pick, and the ability to swap picks in 2023 and 2025.
Dude, Sam Presti, that guy, that they should change the Executive of the Year award and name it the Sam Presti Award. Can we do that?
Like, that is
a fleecing.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And again, don't get us wrong. Paul George is a really, really good player. He's probably a top 15 player in the league.
I got a pair of his shoes that I've only worn one time since we've had this pandemic, Mike. I got it for Christmas this past year. I got a pair of Paul George's. I'm kind of afraid to wear them now. I don't know if, you know,
you might catch something.
I might catch the pandemic.
you might start coming up small in the clutch.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You can't, to me, that haul, and again, all those draft picks may or may not amount to anything or turn into anything, but you're certainly giving yourselves a lot of swings to try to find something. But I just don't think that you can. Paul George is never going to be a top five guy who's going to lead your team to a title.
Nope.
So to give up all that for a guy who's going to be your second banana, and I guess, again, you could look at it and say they needed to trade all that in order to get Paul George and Kawhi, because Kawhi wasn't coming without Paul George is the story that everyone's been told. So it maybe doesn't look quite as lopsided when you throw, if you throw Kawhi Leonard on the Clipper side of the equation, but still, I mean, that is, that is a whole lot to give up. And then don't forget that these guys are really only under contract for one more season.
Yeah, hey, Mike, do you think Kawhi wishes he was in Toronto?
I don't know. I mean, he had an opportunity to go back to Toronto if he would have wanted to. I mean, I don't think you can sit there if you're Kawhi and say, me going to the LA Clippers was guaranteeing me that I'm going to win a title. Now, did he think he was going to have a chance to compete for a title? And did he have a chance to compete for a title? Yes, but it wasn't like it was guaranteed. If he really wanted to guarantee a title, he should have gone to the Lakers.
Yeah.
You put Kawhi with LeBron and AD, and that team walks to an NBA title, depending on, you know.
I think Toronto with Kawhi walks to the finals.
I agree.
I think they walk to the finals.
You put Kawhi on this Toronto team this year and you match him up with the teams that are left in the Eastern Conference. I think Toronto probably would have been the favorite coming in, especially the way they beat Philly last year and then beat the Bucks. Yeah, I think Toronto, had Kawhi stayed, probably would have been the favorite coming into that.
Okay. So we could say ifs and buts. We can do that all day. So
correct.
I think we can move to the prediction now, Mike. Do you think we can move to the prediction now? Are you ready to talk there, or is there anything else you want to say, Clippers?
No, I'm ready. I'm done with the Clippers. All right. Let's focus on the positive. Let's talk Nuggets.
All right. All right. I mean, I'm looking forward to the series. Here's my issue, Mike. The Lakers have had 6 days off. LeBron is going to be more well-rested than you could ever imagine. The Nuggets have gone through two back-to-back series where were down 3-1 and had to muster it up. I'm saying right now, Mike, there is zero chance that the Nuggets win this series. 0%. 0.0. I have the Lakers in 5 just because I think that Murray and Jokic will have one game that they just go off. And I know you're going to make the argument. We can make the argument. Murray, there's no one that's going to really do a good job guarding Murray. I could get that. Would Rondo maybe? Okay. You can make the argument that who's going to guard Jokic?
It brings JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard back into the mix,
yes,
for the Lakers,
yes,
which I'm not
sure.
I'm not so sure that's a good thing for the Lakers.
But who's going to guard LeBron? Paul Millsap? Give me a break.
No, Grant's going to guard him.
Oh, give me a break.
Grant and Gary Harris. I'm just telling you, Grant and Gary Harris are going to guard him.
Who's going to guard Anthony Davis then? Jokic? Mike?
Grant, Millsap.
Oh, come on now. Come on. That series, I'm telling you now, Lakers in 5. I'm giving the Nuggets one game. Done. You have the ball's in your court, Mike. Go ahead.
All right. So, look, I think it's going to be a lot better series than what you think it's going to be, because whatever mismatches there are on the one side, I think their mismatches are equal on the other side. I just don't think JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, if you have them on the floor, you're making the Lakers far worse on offense because you're killing their spacing. And I don't think that anybody else. Do you want Davis? Now, could Davis guard Jokic? Probably. But are the Lakers going to want him on Jokic all the time? Probably not. And I'm not sure that it really matters, because I think Jokic, again, he proved tonight that he doesn't have to necessarily impact the game by scoring. The question will be, can Anthony Davis guard him for long enough stretches and guard him single coverage without the Lakers having to double him? Because as soon as you double him, that's death, because he just moves the ball and then Denver's been banging home shots and Murray's been unconscious. They have nobody to guard Murray. It's kind of like going into it. You had the last series with Harden and saying, well, nobody's going to guard Harden. And of course, we know what happened with Harden in that series. We can beat that dead horse. All we want to beat. I don't expect Murray to come up small the way Harden has come up small in that series. So I think Murray's going to play well. Look, I think it's going to be a lot better series than you think it is. And man, you don't know how bad I'm sitting here. I want to pick Denver. I want to pick Denver, because I just think that after playing these two series, Their confidence level is sky high. And yeah, they could potentially be worn out. And yeah, the Lakers have been sitting there. But it's the same thing I said to you about the Clippers at halftime of this game. I don't trust those other guys for the Lakers. I don't trust Kuzma. I don't trust Caruso. I don't trust Rondo to be there every game. Danny Green's a shell of himself.
I'm disappointed, I'm really disappointed.
The question I'm gonna do it. The Denver Nuggets. I'm gonna pick the Denver Nuggets. Look, I picked the Lakers at the beginning of the year.
Mike,
I'm gonna pick the Denver. Listen,
you're pandering to Bew. That's what you're doing. You're pandering here.
No, man. Look, I'm laying out the reasons why. I'm laying out the reasons why for you. They don't have anybody who can guard Murray, so I think he's gonna have a really good series. I think Jokic does two things. One, it either puts Anthony Davis having to guard him for 35 or 40 minutes every night to slow him down, or it puts Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee on the floor much more for the Lakers, which clogs up the Lakers' offense, which makes it harder for LeBron to get to the basket. I've said it in the last series that LeBron has looked phenomenal. He was great against Houston. I thought he was a little slow coming back into the bubble, but that went away. We all know how good LeBron is. We all know how good Anthony Davis is. The Nuggets have a team of destiny feel. I'm going Nuggets in seven. Nuggets in seven.
Oh, Mike, come on.
Nuggets in seven.
All right, I can't wait till next week when it's like...
when it's 4-0 and they're sitting there waiting for the Heat Celtics series to end?
Tuesday will be... that'll be three games. So Friday, Sunday, Tuesday. So we'll have three games in if we don't record before then. But I'm just telling you right now, I just don't see any way. Bew, I'm so sorry, my man.
Here's the other thing. And so this is one of the reasons why the 3-1 comeback was possible. And it's why before we talked about the Bucks being down 3-0, I thought that there's a much greater chance of a team being able to come back.
Well, it's because there's no home court.
Without the home court, it doesn't matter. Like coming back from 3-1 is no longer having to win a game or two games on the other team's home floor. It's we got to win three basketball games. And so I think that lack of having a home court as an underdog, to me, that is a huge advantage for, in this case, the Nuggets, but for any team that would normally be the road team in a seven-game series. The fact that you're playing on a neutral court, to me, that evens the playing field so much for the underdog team. It takes away such an advantage for the home team. And if nothing else, the advantage is psychological. Like if I'm up 3-1 and I'm coming home for game five and I know I've got game seven still sitting there, and if I'm the team that's down and I win game five, then okay, I got to go home and win a home game, but then I got to go back and win another game seven. I mean, that's tough. But just to say, hey, we're going to just have to win. We win tonight and we come back and we're on the same floor and we can win again and duplicate what we did the previous game. I think it makes upsets a lot more likely. I think it's a lot easier. I think it was a lot easier for the Heat to beat the Bucks on a neutral court as opposed to if they had to do that same thing in Milwaukee. Even if all the games had played out exactly the same, even if Giannis had gotten hurt, I still think it would have been a lot more difficult for the Heat to beat the Bucks, not, you know, beating them on their home floor as opposed to just winning on a neutral court.
All right, I'm making another prediction, Mike. You ready for this one?
Okay. I'm ready.
Lakers win the series.
Okay.
Lakers win the finals.
Okay.
And here's what's going to happen. Everyone's going to say it's an asterisk because the Lakers didn't have to play the Clippers. The Lakers didn't have to play the Bucks. LeBron's fifth title. It doesn't really mean anything. I'm telling you right now, that's what's going to happen. You're talking about how the Nuggets have a chance to win this series, okay? And they're going to, the national pundits and everyone in social media are going to say that this doesn't mean anything because they didn't have to play the Clippers or the Bucks. I'm telling you right now, that's what's going to happen.
when they win the championship.
Well, yeah, and there's going to be some of that talk. There'll be some of that talk no matter which team won or what happened. Because
I think if the Nuggets win, no one's going to say anything, right?
Well, no, because if the Nuggets win, they're going to have gone through both the Clippers and the Lakers.
If the Heat win, are they going to say it?
Depends on who the Heat play in the finals. If the Heat beat Denver.
Well, they went through the Bucks, though. And I'm just saying.
Right, but if the Heat beat, yeah. I think the Lakers are in the biggest danger of having that being said because they'll have avoided the Clippers and the Bucks. So, yeah, their path to the title has certainly been or will be theoretically easier from a team record standpoint than people thought it would have been coming into the playoffs. No question about that. But, again, you have to remember that at least against the Clippers, the Lakers would have had a huge home court advantage because not only would their home games have been home games, but their away games would have been home games.
Yeah.
Playing against the Clippers and Staples. So there would have been that factor to deal with. There's always going to be a narrative that's going to discount what LeBron does. I get it. That's always going to be out there in the media. It's always going to be out there amongst fans and people who don't like LeBron. So he was going to have to deal with that no matter what the result of the playoffs was going to be. But I don't know. There's something the Denver Nuggets have. They just have a team of destiny feel. To me, I just think that what Murray and Jokic have been able to do, I think is replicable. It was replicable from the Jazz series to this Clippers series, which I didn't know if it would be. I thought Jokic was likely to do what he's done. I didn't know that Murray could come up. If you'd have told me that Murray was going to get 40 tonight, I'm not sure I would have believed you. But, man, he was good. And I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do with him. I don't know what the Lakers are going to do with him. So, I guess it comes down to a battle of stars. And yeah, LeBron and AD are more accomplished and probably better than Murray and Jokic. But I think I'd rather have Denver's supporting cast. And I think Murray and Jokic are up to it. I really do. And I know it sounds crazy. And I picked the Lakers to start. So next Tuesday, we'll have a pretty good idea of whether I'm on the right track or not. Although we want the Nuggets to get down 3-1 at some point anyway.
I think it's going
to
be 2-1 next Tuesday, Mike.
Okay.
I think it's going to be 2-1 when we come back next Tuesday.
We'll see. It's going to be fun. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
All right, so let's talk. The Eastern Conference Finals started tonight. And as we talked about earlier, I think this series is going to be a good one. If this series doesn't go 6 or 7 games, I'll be really surprised. I think it's going to be back and forth, ebbs and flows. And obviously, you know, we could talk the fourth quarter and overtime. I'll be honest with you. We talked beforehand, but I didn't watch the first half. It's 6:30. I can't turn it on yet. It's just not possible. I got the kids. I literally walk in the door at 6:10 right now. I didn't get to watch any of the first half, but I watched the second half, primarily the last 3 minutes of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and then overtime. I thought it was a really good game. And, you know, I know you've not been a big Jason Tatum guy in the years, like earlier this year when we were talking.
I like Tatum. I just don't think he's ready to lead a team to a title. I think he's still too young.
So here was Jason Tatum's tweet. There was a tweet about Jason Tatum's last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter in overtime. This is Jason Tatum's stats. Missed three, missed two, missed three, missed three, missed two, blocked dunk, missed three. Game-tying attempt. Now, I want to be clear here. He traveled, right, Mike?
On the dunk?
No. On the last shot of the game that didn't go in, he fell down with the ball in his hands.
Oh, yeah. The one where he
stood up and chucked
it. Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Although in the NBA, that's one of those rules that in every other level of basketball, that's immediately called and enforced. It's kind of like the lane violation. It has to be like the guy walks into the middle of the key before the player even gets the ball from the official in order for it to be a lane violation. And that getting up while you're holding the ball or rolling around, you know, you will go watch a high school basketball game and a kid dives on the floor and turns his body like a quarter inch and the referee can't wait to signal for a travel.
Hey, but
clearly by the rules, unless the NBA rule is different and I'm not aware of it, then clearly that's a travel as he tries to stand up and chuck it up there.
Tate Frazier tweeted, you know, Tate Frazier, formerly of the Ringer.
I don't know him personally, but yes,
he tweeted, it's impressive Tatum got the shot up at the end of overtime, but that's a travel. I retweeted him and said, I'm glad I'm not the only one that said it, because I literally did not see anyone else tweet that, okay? He liked my tweet, so I felt like I was, you know, vindicated. Nice. But anyways.
Well, if that shot goes in, now it suddenly becomes very interesting, because clearly if you're the Heat, and it, like I said, maybe there's something on the NBA rule book that I'm not aware of, but clearly that's going to get reviewed, and clearly that's going to get challenged, whatever. And I can't imagine that if the rule is that, as it is in every other level of basketball, that shot wouldn't have stood anyway, even if it would have gone in. But
yeah, I don't know. I just can't. I can't understand how that wasn't called. But anyways, I thought it was a good game, and obviously we're spending a lot of time talking about this Jason Tatum three-pointer, but we really should be focusing on the two key plays, I felt, down the stretch of overtime. Bam.
Bam.
Blocking that shot. And then that drive that Butler had to the basket, the and one that he had. Both those plays, fantastic. And, my friend that I was talking about earlier, I was texting with him at the end of the game, and I said, Jimmy Butler, I'd like to have him on my team. I don't necessarily know that I'd like him as a teammate, but I know he's going to work his butt off, and I know that he's going to put himself in a position to attempt to win. I don't think I would want – I said I would much rather have him. He's a gamer. I also said that I thought Kemba was a gamer. Kemba didn't have a good game tonight, but he hit that really big shot before the block and before Butler's shot. Kemba wasn't very strong, like good, but he just always seems to show up when it really matters the most. And maybe he doesn't have the best stat lines, but I'd like to have Kemba Walker on my team because I think that he's a gamer and he's going to do his best. And I can't ever recall a time that I said, oh God, look at Kemba Walker lollygagging on the defensive end. Is he the best defender? No, but he's never just standing around not doing something. And offensively, he does have very good command of the ball and he can get to his spots. Shots might not always fall, but I like Kemba a lot.
Realize though what a liability it is to be that small and how difficult it is in today's league. To be that size on both ends of the floor.
Yep, yep. But you agree, right? Like you'd love to have a guy like Kemba on your team, right?
Kemba's tough, and Kemba is not afraid of the moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're happy to have Kemba Walker on your team, but he clearly has liability. So when Kemba has the ball, the liability is he's being guarded by it felt like Hero ended up either switching onto him or guarding him a lot of the time.
That kid's else too. I mean,
he played 40 minutes. He's not afraid of anybody. He's going to be really, really good for a long time. If he tightens up his handle where he can put the ball on the floor and get to the basket consistently against tight defenses, he's going to be really good because he can shoot it and he's not afraid of anything. And I think he's a much better athlete than people give him credit for defensively. Like he moves his feet and he can stay in front of people. And look, if he couldn't do that, he wouldn't be playing for the Heat. I mean, that's the bottom line. And he played really, really well. I thought he did a good job against Kemba. But to my point, Kemba Walker's maybe 5'9", and he's going against Hero, who's 6'5", Dragic, who's 6'3" or 6'4". He's going against Duncan Robinson. He's getting switched on to all these different guys. It's just tough for Kemba to get his shot off. Now, he's got that step back where he goes in and crosses over and pulls back and creates a ton of space. And that allows him a lot of times to get his shot off. But he's got to work really, really hard offensively. There are no easy baskets from this point forward in the playoffs for Kemba Walker. There just aren't. And then defensively, if you watch that game closely in the second half, like Miami just continuously just hunted Kemba Walker. And they kept bringing whoever Kemba was guarding, they just kept bringing that guy up to screen for whoever the ball handler was, mostly Jimmy Butler, and then Butler would try to create out of that. Boston would sometimes try to switch quickly as they saw Kemba's guy going up and do some switches behind the play, but you could tell Miami's strategy clearly was to try to get Kawhi or get Kemba switched on to one of their players so they could basically attack him and go one-on-one. They just kept doing that. So yep. Kemba definitely has deficiencies, but overall, I think if you're the Boston Celtics, you're happy to have Kemba Walker on your team, especially after the debacle that you went through with Kyrie. And Kemba, in all honesty, in an ideal world, he's your second choice to give the ball to. You're going to give it to Tatum first. And like I said, Tatum, I don't think Tatum's ready. Tatum's really, really good. Like we talked about how poorly he played down the stretch, or at least how many shots he missed, but he still finished with 30, 14, and 5. So he's good. What's Tatum now? Maybe 22?
He's 22. Wait a second. You didn't hear them say that like 15 times in the broadcast in the fourth quarter?
I try to tune that out. Anyway, Tatum's really, really good. I mean, and you look at the experience that he's been able to get so far in the league. You know, 2018, they go down to the Eastern Conference Finals Game 7 against LeBron. Last year, they have all the turmoil with Kyrie, and he's got to figure that thing out. Now this year, they have a whole new team. They go through the pandemic. They come back into the bubble. They're in the Eastern Conference Finals again. Him and Jaylen Brown have experienced a lot in their short time in the league. And Tatum, I don't know that he ever gets to superstardom level where he's a guy who automatically pencils you in for 50 wins and being a top three seed in your conference. I don't know if he's that good. I think he's just maybe he tops out a shade below that. And I could be wrong, but that's kind of where I see him. But Jaylen Brown's really, really good. He's maybe just a tick below Tatum because he's not quite as good offensively. But Jaylen Brown is good defensively. He plays hard. He's smart. He's tough. Marcus Smart tonight was phenomenal. I mean, I'm not sure that you want him taking 13 threes, but he played well, and we know how tough Marcus Smart is. Boston's team, their five starters are tough, are good. And I think that's what makes this series interesting is you can say the same thing about Miami. Both of these two teams are pretty gritty, pretty tough, pretty mentally tough. And I think, as you said, it's going to come right down to the wire in most of these games and probably be a 7-game series. The block by Bam was unbelievable. I think one of the things that struck me about it after watching it on replay was how quickly he got up off the floor, because Tatum was way up in the air and going to the rim before Bam even left his feet, and for Bam to get there. And then the other thing was is that ball basically was over the top of the cylinder when Bam got his hand in there and blocked it. It wasn't like he met him on the way up. Tatum was already flushing that ball down towards the rim. So you know it had some power behind it. And for Bam to just block that thing completely clean with one hand in that moment, you'd be hard-pressed to think of a better defensive play being made in the clutch other than LeBron's chase-down block, which is in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. But that block has got to rank up there in terms of huge plays in a big spot. That one's going to be on highlight films for a long time, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and you know, it's time for everyone's favorite segment.
Uh-oh, what'd Magic have to say?
Mitch. Bam Adebayo. I can't.
Uh-oh. You and Magic better get together and share some tweets.
Bam's block on Jason Tatum's dunk attempt was the best defensive play I've ever seen in the playoffs. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
All right, so let's take a quick analysis of that and just let's dissect Magic's statement. And I'm going to try to think of, in NBA history, the defensive plays that come to mind that I think of when I think of defense. I'm talking singular defensive plays.
How many can you come up with? The LeBron block would be that. I'm sorry.
Okay, so how many can you come up with beyond that? I can only come up with one. I can only come up with one other defensive play that stands out, and it really wasn't necessarily even a defensive play. But
Kevin Love shutting down Steph Curry at 3-point line.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Because Kevin Love was so outmatched there. That's the only reason. Okay.
All right. I've only got, like I said, I've only got one trying to come through.
I feel like there was one in the finals that Elijah won. There was a play that he made, but I can't vividly see it.
Maybe you could say in totality, like the year when David Robinson won the MVP and then Olajuwon just destroyed him in the series, but that's not one singular play.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Remember. So the only singular play that I remember that, again, was a defensive play, but really wasn't necessarily a defense. I mean, it was a defensive play, but not in the same way that Bam or LeBron's plays are defensive plays or even Love's, was when Bird stole the pass from Isaiah against the Pistons and passed it off to DJ and they ended up winning that game. That's a steal by Larry Bird that changed the outcome of that game. And basically that was his anticipation and Isaiah's mistake and then making the pass and having DJ score the basket. So that's the only other defensive play, signature defensive play that I remember. Now, again, I'm sure we could probably go back and Google it real quick and greatest defensive plays in NBA playoff history and find some other ones that we'd remember, but those are the ones that stick out at the top of my head. So I don't know that Magic is completely wrong. Clearly LeBron's block has to be the all-time greatest defensive play just because of the stakes. And if you watch that play live or in replay to see where he comes from in order to do it, makes it even more incredible. But I mean, Bam's play has got to be a top five play, even with the ones that we're forgetting. I mean, that was just an incredible block in and of itself, just as an athletic feat. And then the moment when it happens is, you know, equally, you know, clearly it changed the outcome of the game. And there aren't too many plays you can say that.
I Googled it.
Okay.
Because I wanted, this was number 10. This was an article written like 3 years ago. It was written after LeBron's block. So 2016, 2017, something like that. Number 10 is Tayshaun Prince's block on Reggie Miller in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2004.
Okay, no recollection of that. Keep
number
going.
Number 9, Gerald Henderson picks off James Worry in 1984 Game 2 of the NBA Finals.
Okay, I do remember that one. Yeah, I remember that.
Number 8, Jerry West's, you won't remember this, maybe you'll know it, Jerry West's steal and winning layup in the 1962 NBA Finals.
Nothing, I got nothing on that one.
Okay. Number 7, Robert Parrish and ML Carr thwart the Lakers.
I got nothing there. That sounds like a more of a game over the course of the
game. Yeah, it was an overtime game. So okay. Nothing. I wouldn't say that was a play. Oh, no. It's slow now. Number 6, Horace Grant seals the title for the Bulls. Game 6 in the 93 finals is remembered for John Paxson's game winner, but Horace Grant... I don't know what the Grant staggered backward and managed to block it from behind when he blocked Kevin Johnson when he got past Michael Jordan with 3.9 seconds left. Do you remember that?
I got nothing on that.
And that was a big play too. that's Michael Jordan. So I know you watch it. Number 5. Oh, Hakeem Olajuwon denies the Knicks a title. See, I knew there had to be one.
But is that a singular play?
He blocked a shot with 5 seconds remaining in game 6.
Okay.
So.
All right. Keep going.
On John Starks. Havlicek stole the ball, 1965 NBA Finals.
I mean, that's a famous call, famous moment in NBA history. I was going to maybe bring that up, but I don't know the context of that play well enough.
One of the most powerful exactly playoff moments in history, the Celtics led 110-107 late in Game 7, a Wilt Chamberlain dunk with 5 seconds left cut the deficit to 1. But the Celtics had the ball, and victory seemed inevitable. But then something unexpected happened. Bill Russell's inbound pass hit a wire supporting the basket and was ruled out of bounds, gifting possession back to Philly, setting up our number 4 play. As Hal Greer prepared to throw the ball inbounds, John Havlicek had his back towards Greer. As Greer attempted to pass it to Chet Walker, Havlicek instantly spun and tipped the pass away to Sam Jones, and the Celtics barely hung on.
That's probably most famous for longtime Celtics announcer Johnny Most call. Havlicek stole the ball. Havlicek stole the ball. So, yeah, I definitely remember that
okay,
one.
Okay, your play was number 3, Mike. Larry Bird picks off an inbounds pass.
Okay.
So that's number 3, right?
All right.
Number 2, LeBron's chase down block. Now, wait a second. What do they have as number one? Who is this person?
All right, so I'm waiting for number one. Let's hear it. Who is this person? You don't even know who the person is.
Oh, it's an article. Michael Jordan jolts the Jazz. What the heck is that?
The steal on Karl Malone before the shot?
The steal on Karl Malone.
All right, that makes sense. I mean, I still don't know. That all plays into a sequence there for sure, but I don't think you can singularly. This is one case where I think LeBron comes out ahead of Michael Jordan. I would definitely say that.
Mark it in the books.
I would definitely say the block is
more iconic. Let's be honest.
I know you remember the Jordan steal on Malone, but you remember the shot more than the steal, right?
Right. Like, the shot is the moment. And in the Cavs game, I guess the shot came from a different player, which means that LeBron's block is LeBron's moment. If it had been LeBron making the Kyrie shot,
the
block would have disappeared into history.
Yeah.
The same way Jordan's steal of Malone disappears into history. Not that it's not a great play. And LeBron's block is more visually appealing than Jordan stripping the ball from behind from Karl Malone. But yeah, I disagree with the article. I got to put LeBron's chase down as number one.
All right. So I guess we kind of went a little roundabout way there. A little tangent. But I guess we should make predictions as to what we think the series is going to end up. I'll let you go first. I went first on the other one. So I'll let you go first on this one.
Well, we clearly have the advantage of having seen game one, so that gives the Heat a little bit of an advantage. From what I've seen, here's what I like about the Heat. I think that every guy that plays for them has a little bit of an edge and is tough. And I think their bench is better and deeper than what Boston's is. And although I think Tatum is probably a more skilled player than Jimmy Butler, I think you said it earlier that Jimmy Butler's just going to try to figure out a way to make it work. And I don't think Tatum is that much better than Butler to discount what Butler brings to the table. So I think the Heat's going to win this series. I'm going to say Miami in six. I think Miami wins it in six.
I have Miami in six as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's Miami in seven. Just by watching that first game, I think this is going to be a kind of a knock them out, drag them out. Here's the only thing that I think Boston really has going against it, which is also the same thing that Denver has going against them. Boston's played game seven. They played a seven-game series before this. And I know they're playing every other day. But, I mean, Miami's lost one game, right? They've lost one game in the bubble. They're now 9-1. They've played 10 games. Boston,
I also think that I think you got to take into account the fact that they're not traveling.
I understand.
I think that makes a big difference. Look, I think is there something to be said for being rested to some degree? I think yes. However, I'm not sure that it's that big of an impact where it swings how you feel about the series. And maybe if you're just saying it swings one more game where you're going to say it's going to go seven instead of only going six, I guess. To me, I think the lack of travel and the lack of a home court advantage for the team that would have home court under normal circumstances, which in this case would be Boston. I think if this was a normal situation and Boston had four home games in this seven-game series, I'd have a hard time picking against the Celtics. But on a neutral floor in this environment, I think Miami gets it done. Gordon Hayward comes back at some point. I think, you know, you're hearing all kinds of different rumors, and I have not heard, and I don't know if you have, I have not heard a definitive time frame for when he's expected back. There is talk that he's going to be back at some point during the series. So is he back after game two or is he back after game five?
How effective is he going to be anyways? Like,
right. I think the case is more that if you're the Celtics and you can throw out there 75% of Gordon Hayward as opposed to 100% of Semi Ojeleye or Brad Wanamaker, then I think you're going to be better off with 70% of Gordon Hayward and what he brings to the table in terms of just being another guy that can do stuff out there. Does he have to be – I mean, he's clearly not – he's never been the Utah Gordon Hayward since he's been in Boston. He doesn't even have to be the Boston Gordon Hayward. He just has to be better than the alternatives that Stevens has on his bench, which I think even just coming back from an injury, I still think he'd be better, at least in terms of moving the ball and doing some of the things that they would need him to do, than the guys that they're currently playing off the bench. So he makes a difference. I don't know that he makes that much of a difference because he's coming off the layoff. Now, maybe if they get to the finals, they're going to clearly need him against whoever they play in the finals. So it would be important to get him back as early as you can if he's healthy. So it'll be interesting to see when that is. If it's early in the series, then maybe it turns out that's a key thing that swings it. If he doesn't come back till game 5 or 6, who knows? The series could be over by then.
Yeah, I agree. But be interesting to see. All right, Mike, do we want to talk real quick about D'Antoni?
Yeah, let's just talk coaches real quick. I think D'Antoni, I was surprised that he walked away as quickly as he did. Kind of tells you where you are with this whole thing. And just to put a bow on the Houston season, we talked about it going into the series. We talked about it all season long. I just don't think you can win in the playoffs with James Harden. I just don't. And at least not the Harden playing the way he does now, where it's just him going one-on-one, handling the ball all the time. And then when he gives it up, he just goes and stands. And I don't know if that's Harden. I don't know if that's D'Antoni. I don't know if that's Daryl Morey. I don't know what that is. But you're not winning big in the playoffs with that system, with that player. So what does Houston do now? Do they go get a more traditional coach and try to get Harden to play differently and build the team around him, but just build it with a different system? Do you say, hey, maybe let's explore our options and see what we can get for James Harden and rebuild? They're clearly going to be stuck with Westbrook. I can't imagine anybody wanting to trade for Russell Westbrook. At least with Chris Paul, there was still evidence that he was a good player and he was overpaid. With Russ, I'm not sure what system Russ can play in where he's going to be a winning player. Can he still put up big stats? I'm pretty sure he can because he's just such a phenomenal athlete. But as far as impacting winning, I'm not sure where Houston could deal him, anybody who would want him. So I don't know what Houston does. If I was Houston, I would probably keep Harden simply because it's hard to replace a guy with that kind of talent, and see if I couldn't bring in another coach that could get him and the team to play differently. And they wouldn't even have to completely scrap what they do, but they got to get some variance in there because it's been proven over the last couple playoff runs that you can get close with this team because you're just shooting such a high volume of threes that sometimes they go in. But the reality is a lot of times they don't go in. And when they don't go in and you don't have anything else to go to, you don't have any other plan B, you're in trouble. And so I think that Houston's going to look for somebody more traditional to try to coach his team and build around the personnel they have. Maybe they go back to finding somebody else.
Sam Cassell.
Sam Cassell. I heard his name bandied about a little bit today. And now
he's got plenty of time now that his
team. Time to start interviewing. Where does D'Antoni go? Do you think he immediately goes somewhere?
Oh, he's going to Philly.
You think he's going to be in Philly?
Although that doesn't really fit his style since Ben Simmons.
That's what I'm saying. Like if you look at Philly's personnel, you're like, okay, if he wants to get up and down the floor and shoot threes.
New Orleans hasn't hired anyone yet, right?
No.
What about New Orleans?
He would be fun in New Orleans. I think the worry there would be is that one of the things that team struggled with was defense. And D'Antoni's been never been known as a defensive guy throughout his career.
But if you play his offensive system, you don't really need to play defense.
Well, again, it depends on what your ultimate goal is. If your ultimate goal is to have a team that's fun to watch and that's going to make the playoffs every year, then yeah, probably makes sense. But you got to double down. I think if you're New Orleans, you got to be looking to build a championship team around Zion. So to me, I'd want a more traditional coach that is going to get my guys to play defense, is going to buy in to that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Because you just can't win with only one or the other. You just can't win playing offense. You got to be able to play both ends of the floor. So I'd want somebody else. So who are the hot candidates around? We talked about it a little bit last week. Ty Lue's going to get a job. He's going to have, I think Ty probably has his choice of whatever job he wants. I think he could probably write his own ticket, right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, pretty much.
I would guess D'Antoni, I don't know if he's quite thought of in that same way, because I think you kind of have to have a specific philosophy in order to hire D'Antoni, but he's proven himself to be a winning coach in the league for a long time, so he's going to get a job if he wants one. Cassell, it seems like, well-respected former player. You would think that he'd probably get an opportunity if he wanted one. The Van Gundy brothers, does either one of them want to step out of the booth and coach again? I don't know.
I don't know.
I would say no. I would say Stan is more likely to come back and coach.
But I don't want him to coach. As I said before on a previous podcast, I want him on the call. I think he's been so fantastic in the bubble. And it's a nice break from Reggie Miller and Chris Webber. Please.
Does Mark Jackson want to coach again? You got to believe Mark Jackson wants to coach again.
He wants to get as far away from Jeff Van Gundy as he can.
Sure. Well, and I mean, you just look at Mark Jackson's history. He had a good run with the Warriors, and then they replace him, and the Warriors take off from there. And so he's kind of been sort of mocked, and you know he had problems with his assistant coaches there, and there was a lot of turmoil when he left. So I think clearly if you're Mark Jackson, you kind of feel like you have some unfinished business, and I think he's a well-respected guy in most places around the league, so I won't be surprised if he ends up getting a job somewhere. I could see him being hired by the Pacers. I could see Mark Jackson being the coach of the Pacers next year.
See, the argument that you make, though, and I understand, but like I'm going to draw an analogy to football here, but John Gruden was making a crap load of money doing the Monday Night Football game. Why? Mark Jackson's got to be making a ton of money to do the NBA broadcast, right? He's at this point, he's got to be making a ton of money. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but I can tell you why. You want me to cut this argument short?
Is it competition? Is it?
Yeah, because when you're an athlete or you're a coach and you're a competitor, there's nothing that replaces that competition. And if you're a competition junkie, just sitting on the sideline announcing it, and even though you're close to the game and even though you still have relationships with coaches and players and you're still in it every single day, you're just not in it in the same way. You're not competing
day in and
day out. And so I think to me, that's why guys leave the announcing booth to go back and get into it, because they want to try to prove themselves.
Do we have any NBA – I mean, other than Steve Kerr, is there any precedent for people that have been announcers that have gone to coaching? I mean, I don't think we can count Kevin McHale, right? Like
that have gone from being announcers having never coached.
Yeah.
And then go into coaching.
Yeah. Is there anyone that you could think of?
McHale's
the only one that I can think of that coached and then announced and then coached again, right?
No, Doug Collins. Doug Collins clearly did that before. And I know there's got to be other guys that left. Mike Fratello leave coaching, get back into coaching at some point after he became the czar of the telestrator?
Did he ever go back to coaching after he started?
He have an early stint in between his time with the Hawks and his time with the Cavs where he went into the booth for a year or two? I honestly don't remember.
I don't know that. I'm sure there are guys. I can't think of anyone modern though, right? I guess that's what I'm saying.
There has to be guys that probably went back and did, if nothing else, did a local broadcast.
I mean, I guess Mark Price, does Mark Price count? He did like the Cavs for a hot cup of coffee.
Yeah, but Mark never got back in as a head coach. I mean, he got back into it, but never got back into it as a head coach. I don't know. I'm sure there are guys that have done it, but I think it comes down to, the lifestyle of an NBA announcer is probably a lot better, a lot more conducive to having a good, healthy, balanced life outside of the game. But so many of these guys are just wired for competition. And announcing a game is not the same as competing as a coach day in and day out, or even as an executive with a team.
So what you're saying is Mark Jackson wants to not have to see his wife nearly as much as he does. Is that what you're telling me, Mike?
I don't know if I would say that, but Well, I'll leave that one alone. I'll leave that one to our listeners to decide.
All right, sounds good. We'll see what happens. They just announced that the NBA has set the draft is officially happening on November 18th. That is official.
All right, we got to start lining up some draft experts for.
Well, so I'm just thinking like if the November 18th is the draft, what's the earliest the season's going to start after the new year? Right? Would you agree with that?
I think they're going to make every effort to start it on Christmas.
But I don't know. I'm thinking it's after the new year.
I don't think they want to punt on Christmas Day. I think they want to get games. I think they want to have games on Christmas Day. So I think Christmas Day, even if let's say this, maybe the bulk of the schedule doesn't open up until January 1, but they play 5 regular season games on Christmas Day and then they take a week off. I just don't think they're going to punt on those Christmas Day games. Those games are too important to the league. All the eyeballs in the sporting world have been on the NBA. They don't want to give that up where the NFL, I don't know what day of the week December 25th falls on this year, but they don't want to give that up to anybody else. They want to keep Christmas Day being associated with the NBA. So I think they figure out a way to play regular season games, even if the rest of the schedule doesn't start until January 1.
All right. Bold prediction there, Mike.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Bolder than Nuggets in 7?
No, I lied.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. Well, all right. I think tonight you sum it up with three guys on the positive side, Bam in the first game, and then Jokic and Murray in the second game. And all three of those guys, kudos to them. Great performances all the way around. It was a fun night of basketball. I think we got a lot to look forward to in these two conference finals. I think the Nuggets are going to be surprisingly competitive to a lot of people. And I think this Heat-Celtics series, regardless of whether it goes 5, 6, 7 games, I think every game is going to be close. These two teams are evenly matched, and they're going to go at it for however many games they end up playing. And it should be a fun next week or two with the conference finals and then looking ahead to whatever the NBA finals could be. I think, again, any of these matchups are feasible. I think you could have any of the matchups end up being, I think we said it before, that all the teams that were left in the conference semis, you could make a case for them winning the title. And I think probably Denver was down 3-1 at the time. We said they were probably the least likely team to be able to win it. And now here they are. So they've overcome odds so far. I'm going to stick with my team of destiny, the Denver Nuggets.
Well, by the way, our friend of the pod, William Payne, just tweeted a picture out saying, I guess people need to start listening to Chadwick Hickson. Chadwick made a friend of the pod who was on our episode. He made the prediction that they were going to win 104-87. So he was really close. He said Nuggets 104-87. So he was,
Chad's on it, man.
Man, he's nice work. He must have been reading the tarot cards or something. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to see what happens. We'll leave it here for tonight. We appreciate everyone joining us. We'll continue to crank out our NBA pods. We may end up doing an extra one or two. I know we've said that the last couple of weeks, but we may end up doing an extra one or two over the next couple of weeks with the conference finals and then the finals. But this was a fun one tonight. Two fun basketball games. It was neat to see the Nuggets win, even though I think everybody wanted to see that Clippers-Lakers matchup. It's kind of what everybody's been pointing to since the beginning of the season. So even though there's a little disappointment there, it's nice to see some new blood in there. And I'll be curious to see how Jokic and Murray do against the Lakers and LeBron and AD. Should be a fun one.
Lakers in 5.
All right. Sounds like a plan. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.